Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, and Mike Grimm. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, a new labor shift and trend. The list of new state fair foods is out. The University of Minnesota men's hockey team prepares for the next season. But first, this week, the second installment of our two-part mini-series on meals for school kids. Last week, we talked with the State Education Department's Emily Honer about Minnesota's summer meals program underway at nearly 500 locations around Minnesota, where students can, in most cases, get up to two free meals per day.
If there is a summer food site, a child will show up and they will get a meal, no questions asked.
Mm.
So the parent or guardian should not have to worry about looking to find out about eligibility or not. If there is that summer food program site, that child can get a meal.
So it's really then, done, if I may. So So these sites are in locations where there is potentially a predominance of families who might have that need for their children, and therefore it's on an honor system within those areas. Am I understanding that correctly?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The summer food site is going to be based on area eligibility.
Mm.
And so that's where we know where the summer food sites can be.
To find the summer meals program location nearest you, download the free Meals for Kids app to find the nearest location or visit the Minnesota Department of Education website. MNN's Bill Werner also asked Honer, is this another round of the program that's been embroiled in political controversy and even sparked dozens of federal criminal cases?
Some people might be asking, and without getting into the controversy that has surrounded this program in the past, and there's still court cases, but that aside, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about the kids, but some folks might say, is this feeding our future? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely not. This is not feeding our future. This is not the investigation. Where we are right now, this is the summer food service program back to normal. And we have confidence in the integrity of the program, of this program, and of the participants. And we know these sponsors. So what I really want to say about that, too, is our sponsors here, they have operated pre-pandemic, they operated during, they are operating now. We know them. They have survived the last couple of years. They are here to feed kids. They have that good intent. And again, we know them. We know what they're doing. And we're back to normal operations with the USDA program.
Just a quick review for anyone who missed last week. And now let's look ahead to the fall when dramatic changes are in the works because of a bill the legislature passed and the governor signed earlier this year. Again, MNN's Bill Werner talking with the State Education Department's Emily Honer.
The school year is rapidly approaching. Maybe not for the students. We hope not for them, that they feel like the summer is endless, right? Okay.
Yeah, they might want a few more weeks of summer.
That's exactly right. But for those of us who are a little bit older, we say, my gosh, Labor Day is coming up real fast. Summer is going to be gone, and students are going to be back in the regular classroom. And we have a major change now in state policy in that area. The free school breakfast and lunch being extended, available to all Minnesota students. That is scheduled to take effect this next school year, right, in late August, early September. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, you're correct. We are so excited. So the Minnesota Free School Meals Program for Kids, it actually kicked off July 1, although we won't see most of our schools participate until their first day of school comes around that first week of September.
Yeah. Sure.
But we are so excited. And this is monumental. This is historic. Minnesota, I believe, is the fourth state in the nation to have this program, to put it into permanent. And it's something that everyone in nutrition, everyone who is in the industry to care about kids, to feed kids meals, to feed nutritious meals. This is something that is our hope and our dream for our entire career. So we are so excited. Just everyone at MVE here, we're so happy with what was able to be passed. We're happy with the support that we got. And we're also just really happy for, and want to give a shout out to the staff to have been able to do that, because we are ready to go with the Minnesota Free School Meals for Kids program. The applications have rolled out and we are ready to go.
We talked with the governor a few weeks ago on this very program, and I asked, what do you think is when he was most proud of all the accomplishments of this legislative session, which was a lot? I mean, you can disagree disagree with a lot of the policy. A lot of it was controversial. But he mentioned this program, the free school breakfast and lunch program, as one that he felt would perhaps be most enduring or most remembered, or that he was most proud of. There have been some wrangling in terms of debate of the financials of it and which families are covered and so on. But that aside, the concept of it itself, basically the unadorned concept, I think most people could agree with. You and the Minnesota Department of Education, I know, keep an eye on what's going on with school districts and talk with them just generally. School districts across Minnesota, are they ready to go on this? I mean, is it pretty much universally ready to that it's going to be available on the first day of school in whichever school district in Minnesota the students are then coming to class?
Yeah, I believe that the schools are ready to go. And the reason I think that that's the case, too, is this is not a program that completely changes what was already there as the foundation. We're still using the National School Lunch and School Breakfast Program, which schools have been equipped to do. They know how to run those programs. And now we're adding this component. But yes, I absolutely believe that they're ready to go. And yeah, how can you disagree with feeding a child a meal? This is something that I think has support from all over. And again, we are just so excited to be able to be a part of this.
Do you think, and students, we all acknowledge, some of them are struggling because of the aftermath of the pandemic and remote learning, which was not an easy situation, not an easy model by any standard. Do you think that this is going to help them? Some of them, students who maybe were hungry sometimes in class, then do better in their studies?
Oh, absolutely. And we know food is the key. Kids learn better when they have that environment. Kids learn better and they're more attentive. They can pay attention. They have the support. So we know that this is creating a better environment for our kids, a better learning environment, and really the best place to grow up.
Anything else that you want to add?
You know, I just want to thank our schools, our sponsors. They are the ones out there who are operating these programs, feeding the children. And I would hate to miss the opportunity to thank them, because they are really doing the work on the ground here.
That is Emily Honer with the Minnesota Department of Education telling us about free school breakfast and lunch that will be available starting this fall to all students in Minnesota, regardless of income. And Tasha, just so things are absolutely clear, the State Education Department tells us school districts, charter schools, non-public schools, or other participants approved for the National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program may participate in the Free School Meals Program beginning this fall in Minnesota.
Thanks, Bill. Time for a quick break. Stay tuned.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, and son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke, and you could save
your friend, your best friend, teacher, boss, coach.
F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, timed call 911. F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. That's F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, timed call 911. The sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in the recovery of
your neighbor, the waiter, a fellow shopper, a total stranger, grandmother, grandfather.
So learn FAST, the sudden signs of a stroke, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague, teammate, mother.
Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. A new labor-related term is trending, quiet hiring. Joining me today to explain quiet hiring is Ross Yonke, Director of Professional Development Programs in the College of Continuing and Professional Studies at the University of Minnesota.
Quiet hiring refers to the practice of expanding an organization's capacity, the capacity of their workforce, without increasing the employee headcount. And so there are a couple of ways that organizations might do that. One, they might go outside the organization and hire contract workers to temporarily fill those needs in ways that don't add to their employee headcount. And they also, the other way that they're doing this is through an internal means of looking at the employees they have and either doing temporary reassignments to a department that has a shortage or to a needed project that they couldn't otherwise staff, or maybe just having people expand the capacities and skills they have, the functions they can fulfill within their current roles. And so I actually think that the term quiet hiring is maybe not always helpful, because it can, I think some of the narratives around there using the term quiet hiring have almost implied some kind of revenge practice for the quiet quitting trend we were all talking about a year ago. So I think it is a little more helpful to frame it as upskilling your workforce to meet new needs and new priorities. I think that can be more helpful framing than the term quiet hiring.
And, you know, when you think of that, we talked a little bit about whether it be an outside contractor or shifting more responsibilities. Do you think some employees might be frustrated that the hiring is not necessarily being done, but their workload is expanding at the same amount of pay?
Yeah, that is one of the risks of the practice of quiet hiring. And I think as much as possible, organizations and managers want to avoid that practice. And I think that the need there for organizations is to prioritize, to decide what kinds of things are they going to say no to and either not do or stop doing, so that they can allocate their personnel to the tasks that really need to get done. Because if we're piling extra work onto people, even if there's extra pay involved, but you're piling more work on than they can reasonably do, that's a fast track to burnout. And we could end up in the same spot that we were in, I guess, in the midst of the pandemic, when we were all talking about heightened rates of burnout. I think that's a risk here. So I think smart managers need to be aware of that and need to look at ways that they can prioritize to make sure that they're not overloading their employees. Because you are right, that frustration there is a real risk.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of like a double-edged sword when we're seeing, you know, not enough workers to fill some of these positions at the same time. So it kind of seems like we're dealing with two forces at once.
Yeah, exactly. And so you could actually end up exacerbating your problem, especially if you're taking your top performers, putting more work on their plate, them burning out. They might not stick around. And at least so far, the labor market, you know, though it's slowed, it's still fairly good for workers. And so there's a risk you could lose those good people and make your problem worse. One of the risks in quiet hiring is the potential for bias to actually perpetuate some of the gaps we see along demographics, whether that's race, religion, sex. And so I think as managers are considering using quiet hiring, I think it's important that they are aware of the biases that might be involved, whether that's biases, if you have a hybrid workforce, the bias to favor employees who are working in the office with you, biases towards employees with whom you have some kind of shared interests or shared cultural background, to make sure we're aware of that. And intentionally considering all the staff we have when we're looking for opportunities to upskill people and give them new opportunities to grow in their career. Because when quiet hiring is done well, it can be really good for both the employer and the employee, because it can create opportunities to develop new skills in people, give them a chance to show what they can do, and give them a boost in their career.
Thanks again to my guest, Ross Yonke, Director of Professional Development Programs at the University of Minnesota. Time for a quick break. More Minnesota Matters after this. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. The Minnesota State Fair is out with its list of new foods for this year's Great Minnesota Get-Together, and it's generating a lot of interest and conversation. MNN's Brent Palm learns more about what's new to eat and drink on the fairgrounds on this week's Minnesota Matters.
Maria Hayden from the Minnesota State Fair. Big list came out. Looks like nearly three dozen new foods. What are maybe a handful that you've either tasted, heard are delicious, or maybe are unique? Are there a few that are creating a lot of buzz?
Yeah, so what we have been seeing is really that pickles are having a moment. So we've got quite a few different pickle items. Right on the heels of last year's wildly popular pickle pizza, it seems to be a big theme. So some of those include, we have a dill pickle cheese curd taco. It's on our new foods list this year. The kind of a big dill pickle lemonade from Nordic Waffles people are excited about. We've got some Miami mango punch infused pickles from Soul Bowl. We've got a dill pickle lemonade paleta from Hamlin Church Dining Hall, pickle fries. We've even got a new vendor offering pickle fudge. So it's the year of the pickle.
Yeah, and the pickle pizza was like the thing last year. I mean, people didn't stop talking about it.
Right.
What are maybe some others that people want to hear about?
Well, I guess there's really one of the great things about new foods is we try to kind of have a really great range of things for every taste. So one of the cool vegan options we have this year is the Crunchy Balboa from the Herbivorous Butcher. They were a new vendor last year, but this year they've got a new food. It's kind of like a vegan crunch wrap. So I think that one's a really fun, unique offering. We've also got from Coasters, the Donut Delights, for those who really like that kind of indulgent fair food. They're mini donuts deep fried on a stick, covered in bacon with peanut butter and jelly. And so that one is definitely for those who like those more traditional fair foods, but kind of twisting them in a new way. And then we've got like some really fresh options, like the Minnesota Farmers Union coffee shop has a fried green tomato sandwich with a vegetarian variety and a BLT. So a really great wide range of different offerings across the whole list for people of every taste palette.
I saw at least a couple cheese curd related ones. I didn't notice pickles, but I noticed curds.
Yes, we have a couple of different cheese curd offerings. So one of the fun things about new foods is people get to take a chance to kind of put a twist on fair classics like the cheese curd. So Green Mill's offering a cheese curd stuffed pizza pretzel. I myself am very excited to try that one. It looks delicious. And then there's the cheesecake curds from Lulu's Public House. So that's kind of a fun twist on the idea of a cheese curd, but it's a funnel cake batter, and then it's got cheesecake inside with a strawberry dipping sauce. So looks a lot like cheese curds and ketchup, but it's more of a sweet variant. So it's fun to see people putting their twist on fair classics.
I had to ask because it was called Crispy Lutefisk Steam Bun, but I looked at it and it looked like a funky Asian dish. What happened here? We all know about lutefisk in Minnesota, but this looks like a Asian twist or something.
Yeah, so Shanghai Henry's has the Crispy Lutefisk Steam Bun. So that's a steamed lotus bun filled with a blend of cabbage, carrots, cilantro, and yum yum sauce. And then they have Olsen Fish Company lutefisk brined in salt water for 12 hours, covered in a sweet hoisin sauce, and then baked and topped with sesame seeds. So it's your traditional Scandinavian lutefisk with a little bit of a twist on it. Like a common theme we see here in the new foods is people kind of like to take those traditional things and see how they can put their own spin on it and produce it in a new way.
Oh, there was another, like galabo or something. It sounded awesome as well, but I think it was steam bun related.
So we've got another steam bun on the new foods list. The Galabao from Union Hmong Kitchen is a traditional Hmong style steamed bun, and it's got ground pork in it, egg, and a bunch of different spices. It's actually a recipe from Chef Yia Vang's mom, who is the chef of Union Hmong Kitchen. It's his mom's traditional recipe. So I know that it's really cool to be able to have that traditional family recipe represented in a fair, walkable bite as well.
Okay, and one more that I got to go back to because it's kind of up the same aisle as lutefisk, and this place has been there a zillion years, but tell me about the Holy Hamloaf sandwich.
Yes, so actually, that's one of the ones I'm really excited about because here as staff at the fair, we eat a lot of breakfast sandwiches because we're here all day. So this is a Hamlin Church Dining Hall twist on the breakfast sandwich. They have their traditional ham loaf, which they usually serve for lunch or dinner, but they've got it in a sandwich with a tangy glaze and then caramelized onions and cheese with a fried egg in a whole toast. So it's a really fun execution of that traditional ham loaf dish that they serve, but in a delicious breakfast format.
We're out with 34, and I think, did your news release say we're up to 500 now?
Yeah, so we in total here at the Minnesota State Fair have nearly 500 foods from nearly 300 different concession locations. So we've got our great representation of our 34 official new foods this year and 7 new vendors. So adding some more newness to the mix, but that is just a drop in the bucket of all of the different delicious foods we have to offer here.
That's MNN's Brent Palm visiting with Maria Hayden with the Minnesota State Fair. The entire list of this year's new food and drinks can be found on the Minnesota State Fair website. Time for our last break. Back in 1 minute.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
680-10-4.
...could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. The University of Minnesota men's hockey continues to have their own summer workouts, hoping to build on last year's national runner-up performance. Sophomore forward Connor Kurth of Lindstrom spoke with MNN sports director Mike Grimm about the devastation of losing last year's championship game, but how their response has showcased the team's togetherness and has motivated the group for the coming season. Kurth says they had a great team last year and everyone looked out for each other.
It didn't matter what line you were on. You were just going to work for your brothers. Like, there was no animosity. We really did have a special group, and that's kind of a big indicator of that, is nobody cared what line they were on. They were just coming to work and doing whatever they could to get a win for the fellas.
Yeah, and I also thought there were, obviously in hockey there's always times where, okay, these three are together, but there comes times where either position on ice or whatever, you're in with the top line maybe one time, and I'm thinking a couple of times Brodzinski got sent out, and he had the big goal in Fargo, right?
Yep.
I think Cooley fed him, and you're like, those guys – they're not together a lot, but it looked like they've been playing together all year on how that thing set up.
Right.
So that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think that goes to show like the chemistry of the team that we had. And it all starts from the off ice. We're so close and we're always doing stuff together. And then like after practice, we're always playing mini games with each other and just kind of battling. But also you create that chemistry by doing that. So I think it didn't matter who you put with who. I think we were all going to just find a way and do it for each other.
Yeah, and so now, as we mentioned, a lot of that group is back. Nyes is gone, and there's guys who are on this roster that were starting to get some more time on the offensive end of the rink as well. How do you think now with that group coming back? Because it was that D-Cor was the old group last year, and now I think you're looking at, and there's still, there's guys on that D-Cor returning that are very good, but I think you, at least me as an outsider, would look at it and say, okay, that leadership might have to now come more from the offensive side of it. Would you think that's right, or how do you think that will unfold?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. We still obviously have some really nasty D. Our D are just ridiculous. So, but I think like guys like Nelly, Bruce, Neves, like that line was all so good all year, and they showed us how to play the right way. They always were doing little things right, and they lead by example. And then, they're old guys now. You got a fifth-year senior. So I think those guys will really just kind of take the lead and just kind of show everyone else what's going on and how we're going to be this year.
Another talented group of freshmen and newcomers coming in. Based on how you guys were welcomed last year, how do you want to approach it? And I'm sure you're getting to know some of these guys already.
Yeah, that same thing. They're around, they come around and you say hi to the guys. Like, that's how it was last year. We a lot of us lived on campus this year. I think there's just one freshman living on campus right now. But they come around all the time and they got stuff going on with the draft and everything. But you just kind of introduce yourself, hang out with them at the rink, you take them to Chipotle, whatever. Just hang out. Just understand that now they're a part of the group. They're just one of the boys. You're not a freshman. You're just a part of the team. And I think that just building that right away and not making him feel like singled out because they're a young guy, that they, because I never felt like a young guy on the team. I just felt like I was on the team.
Yeah.
And we do a great job of that here. So hopefully we can do the same for these guys coming in.
Not to bring up the bad memory of a national championship game, but I want to ask you about it because for two reasons. I was down there covering and I don't want to get too in detail with it, but I don't think I've ever seen. So I've been in radio now and in the media for since 1990, so whatever it is, 32 years. Been in a lot of lockers. Mm-hmm. Been in Super Bowl losing locker rooms. I don't think I've ever seen a locker room that had the devastation that you guys had. How have you coped with it? And two, how do you move on to continue to say, all right, we're going to use this to win this thing next year?
Yeah, coping, not well. Yeah. I probably right away, just like being with the guys, that was the only way to go about it, because you get by yourself for too long, you end up getting sad. So I think just being together kind of helped us work through it, try not to think about it as much as I can, because it still haunts me. But I think like the devastation in the room just kind of showed like the love and the passion we had for each other to try and get it done for one another.
I think in a weird way, it was beautiful almost.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't want
to. I think that's a great word,
right?
To use.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah, like it was crazy, like how it went down and everything. But now looking back on it, like we got to have that same love for each other this year and the same passion. And yeah, I think just building on that for next year, like we've literally been minutes away from winning it all. So we just take that frustration, turn it into like motivation for this year, and just try and do everything we did this year and just keep building upon it. Yeah. Good foundation.
And it's so hard. It's so hard to win that many games in a row. Somebody has to win. And like you said, you guys were close. So now have to climb that ladder again to get to where you get that chance.
Yeah.
Again, you got to embrace that. I called it a grind a couple of times. I don't know any other word to describe it.
That's a great word for it, but it's an enjoyable grind.
Yeah.
We have probably the most enjoyable hockey team to be on that I've probably ever been on. So it's not a job. It's not hard to go to the rink every day. It's enjoyable. So it's a fun grind that we get to do together, and it just kind of brings us closer for when that time comes. And you saw it in the room, like those guys came back to win it, and we all wanted nothing more to get it done for them. And obviously it came up short, but that's kind of the beautifulness of the moment, I guess, was seeing how the grind brought us together.
That's Gopher Forward, Connor Kurth with MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station. Same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.